It is such a strange idea, the song, and it's really compelling and interesting. And I mean, just musically, it's great, and it just draws you in. But just the idea of it, and it's such an intriguing idea, though, the whole song itself. And I mean, it's our human nature to be intrigued sometimes by things that are not good for us, or to be fooled, maybe, and to not be able or not be willing to see the danger. You look past it until, it's too late.
Welcome to Strange Phenomena, the music of Kate Bush. I am Cecily, and this week we are going to be talking about the last song from the first side of Kate Bush's sixth album, The Sensual World. We are going to be going back in time to 39 before the music started with Heads Were Dancing. A warm welcome again to everybody listening to this week's episode. So we're going to get into the discussion of the show. Like, don't worry. But first things first, I have some great news to share with you guys. Strange Phenomena is now a part of the Pantheon Podcast Network. A couple of weeks ago, one of the founders, who also happens to be a big Kate fan, emailed me and said, hey, would you like to be a part of our network? Our network is exclusively music shows. And I said, well, hell yeah, sign me up. And also even more that, whoa, I get to be on Spotify. I'm going to be on all these places I didn't before. Hi, yay, more people. So if this is the first episode you're happening to be tuning in, hi and welcome to the show. So glad you're here. So yes, I'm super excited to be part of a really great podcasting network, getting to reach more people and getting to also chat about music with other folks who love music like I do. It's just really cool. So that's first thing. Super proud of that. Yay, yay, go show. Also, second thing, the email address for the show has changed. You can now contact me at katebushpodcast@gmail.com. That's katebushpodcast@gmail.com. It is no longer going to be kbcast@linkmedia.com. So if you want to get in touch with me through email, katebushpodcast@gmail.com. And that little flub up I'm leaving in there, hi. So without further ado, now let's get into the show. So this week we're talking about the final song from side one of The Sensual World. We're going to be talking about Heads Were Dancing, and we have a really cool fan who we're going to be talking with about this song. He has been on the show before this season, and well, I'm going to let him introduce himself. Here we go. And with me to talk about the song this week is someone who was last on the episode about Love and Anger. We are going to be talking with an author who I met at AwesomeCon back in 2018. Feels like ages ago in these pandemic times here. And that author is none other than...
James DiBenedetto. Hello.
Indeed. Hello again. So
it's been such a long time.
I know, it really has. So I'm excited to get to talk. This is a bit of an unusual song. And I know you said that you'd wanted to talk about Love and Anger and you wanted to talk about Heads Were Dancing. I'm like, okay, cool. Let's do that. So what is your history with Heads Were Dancing? Like, why is this one of your favorite Kate Bush songs?
It is such a strange idea, the song, and it's really compelling and interesting. And I mean, just musically, it's great, and it just draws you in. but just the idea of it. And I first heard it, which was in college. I had an idea for a story in my head, and I was using different songs of the time to, like, just in my head track stuff. And this was one song that fit a character.
Ooh, really? Which character?
Well, this is nothing that I've actually was able, I never did get the story written, but a woman who ends up traveling with the guy who's going to eventually kill her. And so this song totally fits kind of as her theme. And so that's another reason it's always stuck with me. If I ever do write that story, then, you know, we'll see where that goes. But
that is interesting because the way you're describing it sounds like someone who the woman was intrigued by, who later turns out to be dangerous.
That's exactly it. That's exactly it. And so that song is just such a perfect song for that. It's such an intriguing idea, though, the whole song itself. And I mean, it's our human nature to be intrigued sometimes by things that are not good for us, or to be fooled, maybe, and to not be able or not be willing to see the danger. You look past it until, you know, it's too late.
Yeah, I don't think for me, when I first heard this song, it would have been either on Flashback Alternatives, probably less likely Flashback Alternatives, because they would sometimes have album tracks, but I think for Kate, they had the whole story and a couple of just other random songs here and there. So I think the first time I heard this would have been when I got the Central World album, which I got from Tower Records back when Tower Records used to exist.
And, I remember that.
I remember at that time I was starting to get into her music and I didn't have all the albums yet. And so I went to Tower Records and they had the Central World. And so I got that album, not really knowing much about it, except that part of the Kate Bush narrative was that she peaked with Hounds of Love and Central World is not as good. So I thought, well, I don't know, maybe I'll get it and see what happens. And then, you know, of course I end up loving it. And I don't think it really hit me until later quite what this was about, but I was intrigued. It's very dark,
but extremely.
It doesn't really sound like it. It sounds very, it's got a real rhythm to it.
Oh, totally. I mean, I remember reading, and I looked it up before the show, but I remember, I think it was in the liner notes back when, for any listeners who know, you know, back when there were actual physical music that you actually bought to play on actual physical devices, you would have, you know, the liner notes with the lyrics and maybe also something from the artists themselves. And I believe it was in the liner notes that she talked about this song. And I misremembered, I think, what she had written, because the interview that I saw looking up this morning that she talked about, it was a friend or an acquaintance of hers who had been at a dinner party with Robert Oppenheimer. And my memory of it was that it was Kate herself, which I probably should have thought at the time that the time and the ages would have made that not realistic, but I guess I wasn't putting that together. But so, but that idea of it is just really interesting that it came from not as her experience, but an experience that she was told about, like someone's actual experience.
Yeah, and actually, you're right about the friend, because she talks about in Len Brown in the Realm of the Senses, an NME interview from October 7th, 1989. You know, she says, that's a very dark song, not funny at all. I wrote the song 2 years ago, and in lots of ways, I wouldn't write a song like it now. I'd really hated it if people were offended by this. But it all started by a family friend years ago who had been to dinner and sat next to this guy who was really fascinating, so charming. They sat all night chatting and joking, and the next day he found out it was Oppenheimer, and this friend was horrified because he really despised what the guy stood for. I understood the reaction, but I felt a bit sorry for Oppenheimer. He tried to live with what he'd done, and actually, I think, committed suicide. But I was so intrigued by this idea of my friend being so taken by this person until they knew who they were, and then it completely changing their attitude. So I was thinking, what if you met the devil? The ultimate one. Charming, elegant, well-spoken. Then it turned into this whole idea of a girl being at a dance and this guy coming up cocky and charming, and she dances with him. Then a couple of days later, she sees in the paper that it was Hitler. Complete horror. She was that close, perhaps could have changed history. Hitler was very attractive to women because he was such a powerful figure, yet such an evil guy. I'd hate to feel I was glorifying the situation, but I do know that whereas in a piece of film, it would be quite acceptable, in a song, it's a little bit sensitive. It does bring up an intriguing idea of, like, how you will react to someone when you know who they really are.
You may have had an encounter with someone who was dangerous or horrible and not known it. I mean, it's the cliche you read about after someone does something horrific and they're caught and everyone's like, well, he seemed like a good neighbor and, he came to our Little League games and, he had chicken wings at the barbecue and, then he killed 18 people. And I would imagine that's a similar reaction you think of in a song that, like, oh my God, I was having chicken wings with this person. He was in my living room and it was a monster. But it's also interesting, the flip side of that is, that you don't know.
This kind of, you're just seeing one side of them,
Right.
Anyway, so you were about to say.
Sorry. One thing, and this only actually occurred to me just now, and probably should have occurred to me at some point. And it's quibbling about that she uses Hitler in the song and that the woman in the song doesn't recognize it. That kind of seems, thinking about it more deeply, a little unbelievable. She says 1939. It's like, no, I think by then you would have known he was pretty distinctive looking. But I think you can let that pass.
Because maybe
it's such a great song.
Yeah, it is a great song, and she's telling, it's more about the story than whether right. I'm factually correct. Because sometimes the factually correct is really a lot more boring. But I do kind of agree, by then, he's invaded a couple of countries. Probably know about it by now.
But so, it's just the idea of just, that you might have been at the table or been on the dance floor with someone like that. I mean, that is kind of mind-blowing.
I'm trying to think if I've even, I know for me I've met some famous people. None of them were bad, though. It was all, meeting Tori Amos or meeting some of my other favorite singer-songwriters. Not Kate, unfortunately, but it's okay.
I mean, yeah, I've met, the famous people I've met have been at events like AwesomeCon, so... Like, you know that they're there and there's no mystery about it. I don't know that I've ever met anyone where after the fact it was like that you think that I say, oh my gosh, that was so-and-so. Good or bad, not necessarily like, not in the song, but even the sense of like somebody good who was famous or, and that, I can't think of an occasion where that's happened. Well, my wife had a version of this, which is that she talked to Mel Brooks for 20 minutes and had no idea who he was. Because she had met his son in college, mm-hmm. and they became friends, and he gave her his home phone number. And this was like early 90s. And she had not seen, she was in college, she had not seen a Mel Brooks movie, so... She talked to him and she says it was just like talking to, your friend's dad. How are you doing? How's the weather out there? How are you doing in school? And it wasn't until after one of her roommates said, do you know who you were talking to?
And how did she react when she knew?
She was pretty blown away by that.
Celebrities, they're just like us. They just want to be treated like people.
Right. It's exactly. I mean, I'm trying to think, I don't even know anybody. I can't even think that I've met someone who later became famous. I don't think. Actually, I take that back. Who is it? Puff Daddy was in my high school class.
Really?
Obviously, I haven't talked to him since 1987, and I don't know that I even talked to him then, but he graduated in the same class.
Wait, I do have a story like that. So there was, I'm not going to say the guy's name, and this part may get cut out. I don't know. I'll decide. I used to be part of a local songwriter group, and we would all take turns sharing a song we were working on and offer each other feedback. And I remember this guy coming into the group, and he seemed kind of cool, and he offered some advice to people, seemed really nice. And then he and I ended up chatting about French stuff. And I found out that this part's going to get cut out. You know, I'm going to screw this. I'm going to cut this part out. The person I was talking to was one half of a production group called the Neptunes. Like, it's Pharrell Williams. He works with another guy that he went to high school with.
Wow.
In Virginia Beach, where I used to live. And they were really into music, and they have their own production duo called the Neptunes. And the guy that I was tutoring in French and who will occasionally text me just like asking how to say a random thing in French is this guy. And I had no idea who he was. But he's just like Mr. Secretive. I don't want anybody else to know who I am, and didn't even tell me who he was. So like, I had no idea. I'm like, oh my gosh, wait a minute. You've produced like this hit and this for this person and this person, this person, this person, who I don't listen to on a regular basis, but you've been on the radio.
That is so cool.
And I just had no idea who he was. And when I figured out who he was, my reaction was, oh, well, okay, well, that's pretty cool. And I'm not going to tell anybody else that I know you, because I don't want them to, like, I know you, I totally respect your privacy. But, wow, I can say to myself that I know this major music producer.
That's really neat.
And I had no idea who he was. And I will say that after that, my opinion did change a little bit of him, where I went, oh, okay, so I know you're just a famous guy, but you want to keep that a little bit more of a secret. You want to live more of a private life. Hey, I totally respect that. Cool.
Absolutely.
And that's why this part will get cut out.
That makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah, the song, yeah, it totally, and even the way she talks in the lyric, the way she uses the lyrics in the song, I find really intriguing. Because you can totally see, like she totally plays this guy up, like, just, like, very super charming and kind of cocky. Like, you know, when you walked up to me and you said, hey, heads, we dance, he's just like, nope. If I toss a coin and it lands heads up, yep, we're gonna dance, and you're not going to say no.
You can see where that would be alluring and also incredibly creepy. And some people just have that force of personality, and like maybe after the fact, like in the song, in the light of day, you'll kind of realize what was going on, but in the moment, you know, you can't resist.
Mm-hmm. And I like that they say that the devil is a charming man, and just like you, I bet he can dance.
That's a great lyric. I like that.
Mm-hmm. And I like that. Oh, and also I love the play on words. and he's coming up behind in his long-tailed black coat dance, all tails in the air, but the penny landed with its head dancing.
That's great.
Oh,
that's really good.
Because like the, you know, the tails of a tuxedo as he's like walking in, kind of walking on air, and then you know the tail, heads and tails for a coin.
I think my favorite lyric in there, and this is like a line I wish I could write. You stepped out of a stranger.
Mm-hmm.
That is such a great line. Like there's certain times, and I think as a writer yourself, I would give a lot to be able to write something, even one line that good.
I know it's so perfect because, I thought you were just somebody I didn't know, and now I'm realizing that I do. And oh, wait a minute, now I'm seeing your true self. Oh yeah, I love that line too. I actually did not know that that's what she was singing. I thought she was thinking something like you must have been a stranger or something like that. Like it was definitely a misheard lyric because there's like lots of stuff going on at that point.
You know, the one bit that I, and even though I know it, sometimes like if I haven't heard it in a while and I listen, I still mishear it. And it's that, and this is getting into minutia, I hear Himmler instead of Hitler, which makes more sense in the song because you might not have known what he looked like compared to Hitler.
Mm-hmm.
And he's equally evil. So the song still tracks. And it almost makes more sense to me in that way. But that's like, just like kind of mishear, because she sings it so quickly that you can, and with her accent, you can not quite hear clearly sometimes.
Saying her just making it the charming guy Hitler especially makes it very dark.
Oh, totally.
Like if she had used someone else, I think it would have still had a big impact and it still would have been dark. Like if she had said it's a picture of Stalin, or if she'd gone further back and like it was, I don't know, Ivan the Terrible or something like that, that it would have still been dark. But the fact that she used Hitler,
like you that's it. I mean, that's the apex of evil. You can't go any further than that. And it's like the one thing that anyone, regardless of where you hurt, would know. Because like you could pick, you know, if you think from American history, you could pick like a notorious serial killer and you could say, you know, whomever. And most Americans would get it, but then somebody else in another country, you wouldn't. But no matter where you are, you would get it with this, the way she does it in the song.
Yep. Oh, absolutely. And not just because since that time, there are a lot of World War II movies, a lot more World War II movies than, say, World War I movies. Especially
right.
Like in America.
That's very true. And it's again something that everyone has the same opinion of. Barring a few lunatics, but every you know, there's not a lot of difference in how you respond to that name.
Mm-hmm.
Compared to almost anyone else you could pick, where there'd be at least some, depending on culture and age, different shadings of how you'd respond to it. But the way she chose with this, there's no dispute or question, and you're going to get exactly what she wants. Unlike the song a couple weeks ago, it's pretty clear with this exactly what she's trying to communicate, and she nails it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is actually another quote where she says, it's a very dark idea, but it's this idea of this girl who goes to a big ball, very expensive, romantic, exciting, and it's 1939 before the war starts. And this guy, very charming, very sweet-spoken, comes up and asks her to dance, but he does it by throwing a coin, and he says, if the coin lands with heads facing up, then we dance. Even that's a very attractive come-on, isn't it? And the idea is that she enjoys his company and dances with him, and days later she sees in the paper who it is, and she's hit with this absolute horror. What could be worse? To have been so close to the man, she could have tried to kill him.
Hey, Pantheon listeners, Christian Swain here, taking a break from listening to a little Shout It Out Loudcast episode. Love Tom and Zeus talking all things KISS. Of course, I was listening to them on my new Raycon wireless earbuds. They have quickly become my go-to earbuds because of the comfort. These soft tips are the best I've ever used. And at this price, plus a Pantheon discount, Raycon is really hitting on all marks. Sound quality is great too. I really love having these three EQ options because I like more bass in the music, but less in my podcast. 8 hours of playtime for the battery is great as well. Surround sound, noise isolating, and awareness mode are all included. These are great earbuds. Go to buyraycon.com/pantheon today to get 20% off your Raycon order plus free shipping. That's right. You'll get 20% off and free shipping at buyraycon.com/pantheon. buyraycon.com/pantheon.
She could have tried to change history had she known at that point what was actually happening. And I think Hitler is a person who fooled so many people. He fooled the nations of people. And I don't think you can blame those people for being fooled. And maybe it's these very charming people. Maybe evil is not always in the guise you expect it to be. That's from a Roger Scott interview on BBC One, October 14th, 1989.
Yeah, I mean, I think she's right. People respond mostly. Human nature is what it is. You respond to confidence, and you don't always ask. I mean, it's almost like it's in the back of your brain, and, you know, at some point you step back and think, okay, well, let me think about this, but that's not the first response usually. That's not the emotional response.
Yep.
And that's what people, whether they're, you know, someone as evil as that or like on a smaller scale, like your con artist, that's what they rely on. And by the time you have realized it, the damage is done and they're... Yep. And they're ready on to the next thing.
Yep, and then they got your money, and yeah, I think of all those, you were saying con artists, yeah, even some of those scammers, some of the scams that I will get. People trying to con you out of your money and just being like,
right.
Or going in with working with your emotions that they know just like the things to say to get you to react a certain way, and you're not thinking about it until after the fact, and you're just like, oh shit, I lost my money.
Right. And I mean, and even like not in a con artist way, I mean, that's what a lot of art and a lot of communication, you're trying to hit that emotional point to generate that response, bypass the reason and the thought, and get the person to feel. And like for a songwriter, you're doing it to entertain them or to communicate, and there's nothing sinister about that, but it's the same thing. It's the same technique in a lot of ways, you know, whether it's what chords, what melody is going to trigger certain emotions. You know, if it's, you know, if you're making perfume, what smell is going to correspond to certain memories that people might have and get them to think a certain way and buy your product or put them in a certain mood or visually. I mean, anything, that's what you're trying to do. And it's who we are. Mm-hmm. And it's just, unfortunately, some people use it for bad or outright evil ends.
I think it's interesting as she says that, you know, she says, I'd hate to feel I was glorifying the situation, but I do know that whereas in a piece of film, it would be quite acceptable, in a song it's a little bit sensitive.
I think it's the other way around. I would disagree with her on that. I think in a song, and especially on a 4-minute song, because it's all in your head and you can kind of picture the scene for yourself versus in a movie where it's being portrayed. I think the movie is going to be a harder sell and maybe more irresponsible if that's a thing at all.
Yeah, that is true, because film is such a visual medium, and yeah, you've got this is the exact thing that you are seeing that I want you to see. Whereas, yeah, like you're saying with a song, that you can picture it for yourself.
Right. And like in the song, you know, the narrator of the song, you're in her head. This is how she is feeling, which is not how you should feel. She's telling you this, and you're seeing what you're hearing what she experienced, and you can draw your conclusion to what you think about her and the situation versus visually. It's being lit to make him look charming and handsome.
Because
that's going to make you feel that he is.
Mm-hmm.
So instead of, this is what happened to her, and I can think, well, I can see how she got taken in, or I feel bad for her, or what an idiot she is, whatever my reaction is, versus being made to feel for him as visually you could do. So, far be it to disagree with her, but I guess I do there.
I can see what you're saying, and I'm like between the two, and I feel like within a song or like something kind of more written that's not visual, it's easier to see things, I think, from another person's point of view, because you're seeing how they're seeing things. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah.
It's true. Film is very hard to do when, I mean, there's a reason that certain books just will probably never get made into movies, because it's so tight with the point of view from one person, and how do you convey inner thoughts without boring the audience? You know what I mean?
Right. Oh, absolutely.
I mean, one of the books I can think of off the top of my head, also because he's still alive and will never let anybody dare touch that book, The Catcher in the Rye. Nobody's going to make that movie because it's like so, like, you're so in this guy's head.
Right. Absolutely.
How are you going to convey all of those complex thoughts and the inner monologues and things? You can't do that without boring people.
Right. I would totally agree with that. And I think a lot of the films that are of books that, you know, popular books that are kind of written in that voice or style or point of view, I should say, end up having to change stuff, and they end up not pleasing anybody.
I never quite really noticed much with this song until I was kind of prepping for this episode. When I listened to the music on this song, I noticed, of course, the drums. Like, I love the way, by the way, I love the way the song opens. You know, like these drums, I don't know what they do with it. You know, and then the boom, like the guitars and stuff. I've noticed the drums, I noticed the bass, I noticed a lot of the guitars, but I always forget that at the end that there's a string arrangement, which I find intriguing, especially given the time period that the song is supposed to be set. Like, I picture the party the narrator of the song is, they probably have like a string quartet or something playing music for people.
Right.
always forget that there are strings at the end, especially when her, when she said, you know, do you want to dance? And she's got a little vibrato on her voice. And then it like kind of, I want to say it's the viola. I'm not sure. It's one of those orchestral and stringed instruments under there. They kind of like on the final chord. And then she does this like kind of thing at the end. I always forget about that part.
Yeah, I have to listen to it again to hear that. I mean, I love the opening of it. It just draws you in. It's very propulsive, and that's appropriate to the way she's drawn in to what's going on.
Oh yeah.
Like you're carried. I mean, you're carried on by it, and I think that totally suits the story that she's telling.
Absolutely. You're like getting carried away with this guy and you're just, oh, hey. I think the only kind of little quibble I have with the song, really, with Heads for Dancing, is for me, I feel like it goes on maybe about a minute too long. I feel like, okay, because it's just by the end, we're just kind of repeating. It feels a little bit repetitive toward the end.
A little bit. I can see that.
But then there are other times where I'm just like, yeah, I'm just kind of caught up in the groove and I don't really care that it's been almost 5 minutes. That's maybe the only kind of quibble I have with the song. I like the idea. I think it's an intriguing, it's like we were talking about, it's an intriguing idea. It's not a song theme that most people really kind of delve into. But we already knew that about Kate. She doesn't do everything like everybody else, and that's why we love her.
Although I would think there are probably, I can't think offhand. I'd have to like, not in the specifics of it, but I think there, you could probably find a lot of songs of the theme of being carried away by some, being caught up in someone who is clearly, clearly trouble and clearly dangerous for you.
Oh, wait. Sorry, I just started to meet it. You said that and I thought of a Taylor Swift song. Yes, I know. A Taylor Swift song. I knew you were trouble. I knew you were trouble when you walked in. So shame on me now. I just meant like with using someone from history to kind of illustrate that.
No, that is unique. I can't really, I agree. I can't think of anyone else offhand who's done that.
But you are right. Now that I think that there are a lot of like, hey, wait, you were so charming and you kind of screwed me over. I can tell there's probably hundreds of country songs like that.
I was just thinking you probably go through the list of that. Absolutely, of country.
But the fact that she uses somebody from history to illustrate that is very uniquely Kate. Nobody else can do that. Covered everything. Anything else you'd like to say about Heads Were Dancing?
I think we covered it all. I think that was a great discussion.
I'm
really grateful to be on. I enjoyed talking with you.
Indeed. Thank you so much for taking the time to go and chat about Heads Were Dancing and being on the show. Your second time being on the show. Yay!
Yay!
And so where can people find your stuff? Where can people find your work? This man's work.
You can find them. I see what you did there. Very nice. You can find me, look for J.J. D. Benedetto on Amazon. All my books are there. Or at my website, www.jjdbenedetto.com.
Indeed. Go check out his, go check out this man's work. You'll like what you hear. You'll like what you see. Thank you again for being on the show. Yay!
Thank you. That was a lot of fun.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of Strange Phenomena, the Music of Kate Bush. While we're done with side one of the sensual world, time to flip the record over and go to Deeper Understanding. That's going to be the next song episode that will be coming out after the new year in January 2021. But later this week, there's going to be a special surprise in your feeds. A couple of weeks ago, Zoe and I got together over Zoom, got to see each other for the first time, mind you. And we watched the Kate Bush Christmas special together and talked about it as we were watching it. So later this week, you guys are going to get to hear our commentary on the Kate Bush Christmas special. You get to watch and listen along with us. It was such a fun experience. Oh my God. And I know you guys will have such fun listening to what we had to say about everything because, oh my God, Kate Bush and Christmas. Woo. So now, if you enjoy the show, you can support me on Patreon, patreon.com/KatePushPodcast. You can also go to Twitter at StrangeKateCast and on Facebook, facebook.com/KateBushPodcast. I don't know why I started reading that in a robot. Anyway, you can also call the hotline 1-757-349-6369 and your message could be played on a future show. You never know. And also, you can email me, katebushpodcast@gmail.com. Remember, that's a brand new one, katebushpodcast@gmail.com. Well, my goodness, I can't wait to drop the episode that's going to come out later this week with the Kate Bush Christmas special. And until then, I'll see everybody next time. And I hope you thank you so much for your support of the show. Bye!